All right, back on the record, August 15th, 2025, 3:45 on the Clemenson appeal. Mr. Clemenson still questioning Mr. Heacock. Before we get to that, let's discuss scheduling real quick. I mean, Mr. Clemenson, how much more time do you need with your witnesses?
My goal is to complete with Mr. Heacock today. I'm really hoping to do that. We've just got two topics about the impacts and landscaping to discuss.
Okay. Did you have any other witnesses? You had
Yeah,
Miss
Mrs. Edwards
Edwards.
as well.
Anyone
Yeah,
else?
no, not at this time. But we may look at what we've gotten about the case file. We're not certain we've gotten the answers about the comments
Okay.
yet. But
So we're not going to finish today, probably, right? Is the
no.
conclusion there? Yeah, and I'm pretty much fully booked next week. Would the 25th work to finish this off for everybody? It's a Monday.
No.
For myself and admin staff, we would be available the 19th of August in the afternoon, the 21st of August in the
As I
morning.
said, next week I'm fully booked, so I'd
Okay.
have to do it
We
after,
could
yeah.
do Thursday the 28th. Normally we have a land use hearing scheduled on those days, but I know that I won't have anything to bring to you on that day, so
Okay.
we could schedule for that day since we already
That
have
works out.
that day booked out.
Yeah. How about Mr. Derlin? Does that work for you?
That works for me.
Okay. Miss Oda?
The 28th works for me. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll finish this off. We better on the 28th in the morning, starting at 9 o'clock. All right. So, okay, Mr. Clemenson, let's wrap up your testimony for today then.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm going to share screen once again. Make sure I get this.
Testing.
We hear you.
We hear you.
Sounds good.
All right. So here's the gist of what we've got, Mr. Heacock, and for all, we're just going to be talking about the SEPA impacts and then a bit about section 17500 as related to this in terms of the buffers. So your determination, Mr. Heacock, states the decision was made after review of completed environmental checklist and other information on file with lead agency. In other words, the checklist was foremost. It is also cited foremost in the county's pre-hearing brief and defense of decision. Per state law, the applicant is required to answer each question accurately and carefully. Going back to your email from October 2022 that we were looking at, and I can pull that up. That was A48.
I recall, yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but just in case you want to take a look, I see you address the how you handle the intake of the checklist and examine it. You indicated that there is no requirement in the DCD policy to have the applicant correct a provided checklist at that juncture. Are there any times in which you have on any projects per KCC 18-04-115?
Oh yeah.
So there are times in the county, in other words, the county has the ability to require that the county and not the private applicant will complete all or part of a checklist for a private proposal. If, for instance, one of the reasons is if inaccurate information of previous proposals or whatever has been supplied.
I'll tell you typically what happens is that when we review an application prior to it being submitted to us, then we go over the checklist, we make sure it's signed, those kinds of things. And if there are matters that we understand need to be part of mitigation or identified, then we don't accept the checklist. We ask for them to correct it. That's typically what we do. In this case, it's, created from a landowner. We understand it might not have, the fact that there was a bald eagle out there that had shown in a driveway photo, those kinds of things. But remember that I had previously reviewed for that matter. I knew that there probably were bald eagles that incidentally use this property. And the interesting thing that bald eagle had a crow dive bombing him. So more than likely, he got a crow's nest and got some crow baby. And that's what eagles do. They're, I mean, Mother Nature's not nice often. But either way, we make every attempt to identify, environmental concerns and that kind of thing in relation to a provided SEPA checklist. But we don't stop there. We also have other things that we review. In the SEPA decision, you'll notice that I indicated that we looked at the priority habitats and species, which is a Washington State Fish and Wildlife generated list where we have priority species of concern, that kind of thing. Oh, God, sorry, someone's calling me. Just a second. Get rid of them. God. SEPA checklist from a applicant. He did an okay job, if you ask me.
I'm not going to pull up the checklist and go over all that with you. We
That
asked,
would be great. That's already been done.
Well, yeah, so it's already been done with Mr. Edwards, and so I'm not going to do that to you. There is one section though that I think overarchingly informs this entire issue with the checklist. And in the plant section, and I'm not necessarily going to bring it up unless you want to take a look at it. The applicant indicates the pasture existed in the parcel prior, and you have indicated that you believe that that pasture existed in the parcel as well. And the suggestion here is that when you look at the answers, including 4, 5D as well and others, it does appear that the applicant filled out the checklist from the perspective of the time contemporary to when it was filled out, in other words, 2020, rather than filling it out from the perspective of the forest in its prior, or I should say, the parcel in its prior condition. Can you, in this case, can you rely on a checklist that doesn't concentrate on that original forested condition of the property?
Well, a checklist again is a it is refers to a point in time. We don't require a checklist to go over what is no longer on the property. So that would be a moot point if you ask me. It's about the existing conditions on the property. Yes, this existing condition was part of a code compliance reference. I noted in the SEPA decision in the description that it's a 4 point, where is it here? 7.14 acre property and approximately 3.7 acres were removed in this permit action.
Okay.
So, and I described that it had been, the conversion, if you will, of forest lands. I guess I could have described it a little bit better and said, hey, this had been previously forested. But the point is, or maybe I did, it says grading activity removed trees, stumps, and native understory of approximately 3.7 acres of the approximate 7.14 acre property. Trees were also removed in a riparian and wetland area. So, I mean, we address that in what we do as a description of the property, description of the proposal, the description of the impacts. And the point is that this was also after the fact. We make that notation as well.
Okay. So, did the baseline condition of the parcel as depicted on the checklist help inform you about writing that SEPA determination's suggestion that the pasture had existed on the parcel before the conversion?
Sure.
Okay. All right. I was going to ask you, Mr. Heacock, about some of the basics that I'm sure you're asked all the time about SEPA. What is an impact? How is an impact significant? All that. But for the purposes of getting through this today, I'm going to skip past that for now. Would you agree that the ultimate purpose of SEPA, though, is to determine the impacts of a proposal on the environment and people, and then mitigate them as necessary?
Well, in a general way, yeah, in relation to specifics of a project.
I may have asked you this before, and excuse me if I have. How often do you deal with SEPA determinations in an after-the-fact permit for which the proposal took place 6 years before?
Usually it's much quicker than a 6 year after the fact. I don't recall anything of this vintage that I've reviewed before, but it's certainly there's been situations where it's been, a year or 2 years, that type of thing.
When you say vintage, you make me think of a fine wine. I don't know if we'll go there, but so in other words, when you're approaching these cases, do you strive to approach not just from the checklist? I mean, forget the checklist for now. Just in your analysis, do you strive to approach the project's baseline condition from prior to the violation?
Yeah, typically, sure.
Okay. When it comes to knowing the SEPA impacts of an after-the-fact proposal. I mean, don't we have the luxury of being able to witness the outcomes of SEPA that's usually tasked with prognosticating? In other words, can't we just go see what's happening?
What do you mean we?
We being everybody, in other words, the DCD, communities. In other words, anybody can see, we're not sitting around with experts prognosticating what's going to happen. We can actually go and investigate it, correct? Any impacts?
I don't know where, I don't know where, what the question is. What's the
Okay.
specific question?
So, in other words, we have the luxury, yes or no, of being able to witness the outcomes, witness the impacts that in this case, that SEPA is usually tasked with trying to predict
Okay.
because it's been 6 years. So, in other words, these impacts, like Larry you're talking about with the Anderson and Clark
Okay.
Russell Lenoir.
Sure.
These are neither speculative nor remote nor improbable, because they're there, they're happening, right?
Well, but they've been identified. Yeah, right.
Okay. So since the proposed action already occurred, and as you say, it's a vintage in this case, what type of analysis did you conduct on each of the environmental elements on the parcel and its vicinity now compared to before?
Specific to the tree removal and the conversion activity and relating to the grading and how stormwater is going to be controlled and that type of thing. That's the analysis in a grading permit. This is about grading. It's about a grading action that occurred previously on a rural property. And that's the nuts and bolts of it right there.
So you didn't examine the parcel from the perspective of each element and say, okay, we've got 6 years in our, maybe just 3 or 4 years back then. We can see what's going on with aesthetics. We can see what's going on with air. Did you break them down individually and analyze each one based on what we were seeing on the, we being the community, you, everybody, humans, we're seeing on the parcel these years?
SEPA is SEPA. I mean, it is a process dealing with specifics on the property itself. So that's what we analyzed. Everything about the proposal and the impact from the related tree removal for controlling stormwater and that type of thing. So, yeah.
Okay. So, of course, SEPA allows for the consideration of aggregate combination of impact factors so that several marginal impacts can be deemed significant when considered together. Did you consult with photography, interview residents, consult other sources to address each even marginal elemental impact to see if they together formed significance in aggregate?
Well, we typically in a SEPA decision of this type look to, adjacent neighbors when it comes to impacts. We don't, we don't go out and interview people in the community. We understand that no one in your particular organization liked the fact that these trees were removed, but the fact is they were. And our requirement is to rectify the related tree removal for the point of stormwater control, because this is a grading permit that's rectifying that matter. We did happen to identify additional concerns from people concerned about their rural enjoyment. And so, as that's an element of how we review for rural enjoyment and in relation to an impact, that is what we came up with in this particular case, is to provide this this related SEPA decision where we indicate that there will be buffers that are restored specific to people that have stated concerns.
I'm just going to touch upon a few pertinent elements, not all of them, of course, and associated impacts. What was the state of the prevailing winds from the applicant's parcel onto neighboring parcels prior to the conversion?
Prevailing winds?
Yeah.
Well, they're either out of the north or out of the southwest. That's pretty typical.
Did you conduct any analysis on the air impacts as related to the newly prevalent winds crossing the parcel from east to west?
No.
Did you examine wind snap caused to the neighboring western parcels, both of them, by the loss of the canopy?
Wind snap? I've never heard of that. You mean
Well,
wind throw?
no, wind throw, when the tree falls over the base, wind snap just the trees breaking midway up. So in other words, mainly Douglas firs, which seem to be more susceptible to that, the western hemlocks, of course.
Oh, so you mean laminated root rot that can cause the top of the tree to die from the top on down?
No, what we're talking about is what we've witnessed is wind snap in such a way that the top half of trees have been snapped, all blowing away from Edwards on these properties in that area.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that as
Okay.
being anything that anyone mentioned,
Okay.
but wind snap, I've never heard of that term.
Okay. All right. One of the impacts that you do single out in the DNS is dust. What was the state of blowing dust from the applicant's parcel onto the neighboring parcels prior to the conversion?
I have no idea.
Did you study the dust impacts caused at the northwest corner since the conversion?
I saw a video of driveway dust, and certainly mowing activities, there would be dust. But it's that would occur with any farm. You would have, if you're mowing, then you're going to get, dust and particles of seed heads and probably insects and other things that are put into the air.
At the bottom of the DNS's comments, please see the conditions below, which, when completed, will address the associated concerns. Did any of these conditions mitigate the dust that you had mentioned before in the DNS?
Well, the fact that it's a mowed pasture now and not, open ground, that's just normal erosion control. And so, controlling dust and wind generated dust itself is something that was good that the site was stabilized, but that's a normal erosion control situation anyway. But there were definitely portions under trees that have been mowed previously as well. So the mowing, is still a it's it occurred then, it's going to occur now.
Incidentally, the type of areas you were just describing, areas that were mowed under trees, that doesn't qualify as pasture, does it?
Well, you can certainly have pastures that that are underneath trees. I mean, a lot of farmers like that shade, the aspect of shade for their livestock, so that the livestock can have a shaded condition. Edwards has left several trees in the pasture areas, the new pasture areas. Yeah.
Does Kitsap Code give the DCD the authority to require the surfacing of a road if its condition is seen as a dust hazard to the community?
No, I don't think so. Not in the rural area.
Okay. What was the state of soils and the trees in the neighboring parcels prior to the conversion?
I have no idea.
What was your analysis of the climate impacts on vegetation and soils of the parcels to the north and to the west that have experienced significant dryness, heat, tree death, tree dieback since the conversion?
I don't know.
Okay. Have you compared the health of trees on and surrounding the applicant's parcel from 2017 to now?
Compared the offsite trees?
Both on and off-site, if it's in a nearby and on-site.
No.
Have you evaluated the forest restoration project to the west side of the applicant's parcel to determine how performance in immediately adjacent areas to the project has differed from other areas in that project?
No.
What was the state of noise and odors moving across the applicant's parcel onto the neighbor's parcels prior to the conversion?
I don't know.
How do you determine the noise and odor impacts as they relate to nearby Washington State's ferries terminal and the two arterial roadways that experience loud and sudden traffic patterns when ferries offload?
It's not a matter for this.
Are you familiar with the noise made by 20 Harley-Davidson motorcycles?
Yes, I'm familiar with the noise of about 250 Harley-Davidson
It's
motorcycles.
quite impressive. Are you familiar
It's
with
about 15 minutes.
the Are you familiar with the diesel emissions of the aging ferries?
Yes.
What was the condition of the stream that crosses applicant's parcel after it exited the applicant's parcel prior to the conversion? Did you do any analysis of the stream?
I don't know. That was off-site. There is no on-site stream.
No on-site stream.
Correct.
So there was no examination of any flow or sediment patterns in the stream. That's not your area.
Yeah, I think the stream is on your property.
Can
As mentioned.
I ask a clarifying question here? I assume that some of this is Mr. Clemenson's testimony. I'm trying to, again, parse out which is which, specifically to like site conditions, and adjacent property conditions. So you were talking about wind damage, that kind of thing. Has that been established in the record, or are you kind of asserting that in this line of
That's
questioning?
been established in the record in my testimony that's been adopted as through the declaration of the original appeal statement. So when the original appeal statement was entered, all of these impacts were covered in there
Okay,
and entered into the
but
record.
through your testimony, is that correct?
Through my testimony, I don't think we had mentioned the tree snaps, the wind snapping, no.
Understood. Thank you.
We did, Mr. Journal, we did cover the tree dieback in roughly the same area, if you recall, to the west, but we didn't cover the snapping of those trees at that time.
And of course, Mr. Gerland, if you want to cross-examine Mr. Clemenson on any testimony
Yeah.
that's included in his appeal statement, you have that right. You can,
Okay. And I think, again,
yeah.
as we established before, I think it'll be better if we just do that all at once after
Okay.
this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm happy to just, yeah, I'll save it. Thanks.
As mentioned before, both the applicant's SEPA checklist and SEPA determination suggest, of course, that this pasture existed on the parcel prior to the conversion. In your determination, it is stated in the phrase conversion into additional pastors, which is on here. You can try searching for it. And then also the phrase expanded area in condition number three, in other words, west of the expanded area. Can you describe the size and location of that previously existing pasture?
Did you say that again? I'm sorry.
Okay, so in the determination, it is stated the phrase conversion into additional pastors.
Okay.
And then additionally, in number three, condition number three, you state the phrase expanded area in reference to the pasture. So this is assuming the pasture existed in the parcel before. Can you describe the size and location of that previously existing pasture?
Specifically, if I threw a dart and said what had been existing pastures, probably 3/4 to 1 acre, something like that, maybe a bit more.
Okay. How many noxious weeds were evident on the applicant's parcel and adjoining areas prior to the conversion?
I don't recall noxious weeds on the site. I think there was some Scotch broom in the back.
What was your comparative analysis of noxious weeds on the parcel after the conversion, if any?
I didn't discuss weeds.
Okay. You mentioned the eagle already. Were you aware at your 2019 site visit that there was a suspected eagle's nest along the boundary between the applicant's parcel and the one to its west?
I did not observe an eagle nest.
Okay. Was there a sizable deer presence on the parcel prior to the conversion?
Yes.
Have you reviewed persistent damage on neighboring forest lands that have been experienced since the conversion due to deer rub?
No.
What was the aesthetic condition of view and privacy as related to the applicant's parcel prior to the conversion?
The aesthetics that you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
They had a little farmstead, a house, a garage with a unit above or something. I don't know. And it was treed.
It was, in other words, you couldn't see from one side of the property to the other. It was solid, essentially.
There were open places, for sure.
The applicants indicated in the SEPA checklist that the only aesthetics impact involving the project is to have obscuring trees removed. In your judgment, what improved view was the applicant referring to?
I would think a territorial view.
Does natural forest vegetation have any aesthetic value?
Depends on the viewer.
Are the applicant structures and those on other neighboring parcels now easily visible in the vicinity?
I have no idea.
You state in your comments on the DNS that visual impacts are mitigated in the conditions. And presumably you're discussing the two restricted areas of the screening buffers protecting specific neighbors, correct?
Yes, correct.
So in your analysis, did any, these were the neighbors that were experiencing visual and aesthetic impacts, right?
Yeah, that's what we reviewed for, right?
Okay. What was the extent of light moving from and across the applicant's parcel onto neighboring parcels prior to the conversion?
The extent of light movement?
From and across.
Light does not move. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Let me rephrase that. What was the extent of light seen across and from the applicant's parcel prior to the conversion?
You mean sunlight, the change in sunlight in relation to...
Artificial. I'm sorry. Let me clarify. Artificial sources.
Artificial sources of light across the property. Obviously, it would be... that would change with the lack of treed vegetation, for sure.
aside from the impacts you noted with the headlights shining to the parcel directly centered north, did you examine the headlight impacts to any other parcel?
I think generally, understanding the orientation of the driveway, how that was modified, that type of thing, the incoming and outgoing driveway review, looked at that generally for sure. And so, you know, that central neighbor, I don't recall the north neighbor's name, but you know, we reviewed for that. And even though the fence was installed, we were likely going to consider planting in that particular side there. But the way that the driveway is oriented, that's essentially what we reviewed.
Okay. Do you consider headlight impacts when they cross the parcel, say from east to west or west to east? In other words, if there's, you know, from other roadways that are striking other parcels.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Have you visited the parcel at night since the conversion?
I've never visited at night, so
never.
I don't know.
Are you familiar with the just the general lights from what? Let me ask.
I saw a picture of holiday lights.
Are you familiar with the ambient glow from the Washington State Ferries terminal?
No.
Oh. Excuse me. Has there been any historical use of agricultural operations at that access road as it comes in and out of their parcel?
I have no idea.
So moving forward to the end result of the determination, we'll be discussing that decision and its conditioning specifically now. By requiring the conditions of screening, which elements of the environment had you determined to be impacted more than average in the amount of intensity, quality, or degree?
So are you reading off of a SEPA checklist by chance?
No, not right now.
So could you say your question again? You're talking pretty quickly.
Okay, so my apologies. So when you think about the elements of the environment, SEPA, and you indicated that the conditioning was to mitigate some of the impacts that you had already seen. Which elements of the environment are you indicating here may have been more than average and require mitigating?
Oh, that would be light.
Okay, light. And that was the only one. There was no visual, no aesthetics.
Nope.
The determination states, quote, this decision was made after review of completed environmental checklist and other information on file with the lead agency. When you refer to the other information on file, is that information or its application to this proposal reflected in the case file or the exhibits in this appeal?
Yeah.
So going back really quickly, and this gets, we're getting into the buffers now, and this is where we're going to reside. I'm going to go back to the farm plan map. This is F23.
Okay.
Apologize, I'm going a little more slowly because my eyeballs are killing me right now. All right, this is the farm plan map.
Mm-hmm.
The conditional enforcement for the screening buffers in that DNS points at the farm plan. How can the buffers or any upfront DNS conditioning associated with the farm plan be appropriate or enforceable if the applicant has admitted it's not entirely accurate and will still be updated?
Well, we've conditioned the application to provide the functional screening for the concern of the headlight glare, and specific to the north property and the adjacent property to the northwest. So these are conditions of approval, and they're specific conditions that are written in the permit that we've also required. So those specific conditions in the permit might not be exactly, they might reference Title 17 conditions, landscape conditions.
Okay.
I believe.
All right. We'll get there in a moment. The farm plan map here shows the buffers in a different location and size from what the applicant's already installed, which you have approved to this point. And the farm plan map.
I've not approved anything. I looked at something. There was an ask. Can we plant some of that vegetation? Yes. I want to make it clear. I have not approved anything out there. And why is that? Because we don't have an approved application. We have an appealed SEPA decision. We still have code compliance that's going on. And we have a project that is also appealed. So we can't do any inspection in any official capacity. I can look at something and say, oh, that looks great. But until we go out and measure and, make sure that we comply with the conditions of the grading permit under the landscape component of the permit, then, it's not approved. So I just want to make that clear.
Okay. We'll discuss that in a moment. There is no representation of the northern buffer at all on this farm plan. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, right.
So where is there any drawing or on any plan to indicate the exact locations of the buffers required?
Adjacent to the entirety of that property.
Okay, but not represented on any plan.
Well, we had asked for that kind of thing, didn't we?
Okay. The farm plan also describes the consistency of the buffers as being evergreen, huckleberry, vine, maple, and red flowering currant.
Uh-huh.
These are completely different from what the applicant's already installed. How are these reconciled?
Through inspection.
Okay. The hedgerow is shown overlapping on this farm plan map with an area of sparse surviving vegetation at the bottom down here. So I will point here, the mouse, essentially from the 422, the BMP upward, is where the new plantings were, if you recall. And the areas further to the south was sort of sparse surviving vegetation. Does this mean that the new plantings must be mingled into the native vegetation at the more southerly location?
Well, we would look at that that specification. I think what we would typically do in a situation like this would be to require a more specific site plan once we got to that point of an issued permit. I should say a planting plan, a specific planting plan that demonstrates that rural character landscape buffer.
Got it. When screening buffers are required along the outside of a parcel such as this, are agricultural operations allowed in the space between the buffers and the boundary?
There wouldn't be any ag restriction.
Okay.
I would suggest that they put up to make sure, like goats or things like that wouldn't get into the screening buffer, that they would put up a non-climb fence or something like that to exclude the livestock from getting in there.
Sure.
So that would make sense.
And that's also to protect the screening plants, obviously, correct?
That's a point. Yeah. Right.
All right. So back to the DNS. When you say in the DNS, the farm plan provides, or quote, provides an enhanced visual screening buffer. Let me see if I can explain this. Here we go. Enhanced visual screening buffer. What does the word enhanced mean in this context?
I guess that there would be a visual screen if, but that's again in an easement. So we're enhancing the existing vegetation that's in the related easement area. And then the enhancement, the statement of enhancement is just to say, hey, we're enhancing this area with additional screen plantings. Yeah.
I'm going to pull up A133. This will be a photograph of what I believe you may have encountered when you went out earlier this year to the applicant's parcel and took a look at some of the plantings they had already put in this area. You'll see in the distance here, where I'm mousing over, that's sort of the area of sparse vegetation I was describing earlier, further to the south. We're looking from northwest southward. And these are lines of, I can't remember exactly how many trees. There are two rows of
conifers.
Small conifers that were placed. No screening is required for the area further south where the applicants have featured in the past, a future goat barn and a future larger barn in the various plans. Is there any particular reason why the buffer stops partway down the line here?
I don't think so, not in relation to the headlight glare, which is the matter before us. That's what we're reviewing for the screen, why we're having the screen, functional screen. There's no driveway down there.
Let me pull up A136. So you recognize this looking from, west to east near the applicant's northern boundary, which sort of runs along here. You see the cedar fence to the property to the north. The north line sort of runs right along here.
Yep.
You'll see that the installed screening that the applicant put in does not extend up closer to the road. In other words, it doesn't get within anywhere near the roadway. The applicant has stated that they can't plant trees anywhere near the roadway because they would be obstructions. Are trees planted 4, 5, 6 feet off of a road, are they obstructions?
Depends on what the tree is and how mature it gets. Typically what's done is, a row of conifers, further away from a roadway, and then shorter growing vegetation in the front row. So, your shrubs and that type of thing would be in the front. By the road.
Yeah, by the road. I understand. Yeah. So I'm going to show just one more here. So this is the view looking straight through the applicant's entry gate. The easement, unfinished easement, unbuilt easement is off to the right here. So we're looking towards the east. Is there any particular reason when you're considering this buffer for the impacts you discussed earlier, is there any particular reason why this buffer is not required to extend closer to the roadway here?
Well, there would be, once a tree grows up, you're going to have, limbs going into the roadway. That doesn't make sense to have trees within a roadway. And, then it's, on the property line there as well. I think that it could extend a little bit further. That's something that I think could be reviewed, but yeah.
You mentioned in a December meeting with the applicant and with me that if trees were planted alongside the roadway, they could be limbed up, depending on the type of tree. Is that still your opinion?
I know there's trees that I observed driving into the property directly off of Southworth Road that I feel should be limbed up at some point once they get bigger. Certainly of fire engine would not be very happy about You know, the fact that their fire engine apparatus could be scraped by trees that are planted, you know, within an easement, that type of thing. But that's, you know, yes, you could plant and limb later. Yes.
Can excelsa red cedars be shaped? I mean, essentially arborvitae.
Mr. Examiner, could I just respectfully ask that we keep this to the project details here? We kind of seem to keep going into speculative territory of what could or couldn't exist.
Okay. Are you just about done with this, Mr. Clementson, the trees?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, let's wrap that up and move on.
Yeah. Just for the record, those are excelsa red cedars along the entryway, so they're arborvitae. Okay. I'm going to go back to the DNMs. Is F26. I'm going to skip this one question because you've already answered it, no need to make you answer it again. All right, and condition number four. When you say that this buffer is recommended to offset visual impacts along their property line, and then a similar planting scheme is recommended. The word recommended is used twice in that statement. Is it required or is it recommended?
Looks like it says recommended, doesn't it?
Okay. Is there a distinction there? In other words, is your intent for it to be required, or is it the intent for it to be recommended?
The point of a visual screen buffer is to provide that rural character and the exclusion, or the attempt to at least mitigate for light impacts. So a similar planting scheme means that it would be something that we would review. So it's something that we would do at the time of that initial inspection. Once we have that initial inspection, if we feel that planting is going to thrive and provide that screening, the functional screening, then we'd be satisfied with that. We would require then again that it would have a monitoring bond that would be required, and that bond would have to be reviewed, and we would have, you know, the assurance that that a monetary assurance that would be maintained, and then again, additional inspections would occur through the bond procedure. So in a permit like this, once all of the conditions are met, then there is typically the permit gets converted to a bond if there are matters that have not been rectified at this point that need a longer time frame. So a bond permit then has further inspections that occur on an annual basis typically. If that
right,
helps.
So if the final constitution of the buffers is not yet quite determined, because that's going to be determined later, how do neighbors appeal that decision when it comes?
They appeal that decision?
Yeah. In other words, if the neighbors don't believe that the landscaping plan or whatever satisfies the needs for the buffer, that would come after the examiner has rendered a decision where, you know, this permit's been issued. How does anybody protest it at that point if they don't believe that it meets code?
Well, I think the time for that is now. If there is a recommendation, does it make sense for the applicant to build a wooden fence right adjacent to that north property owner? Probably not, because that fence is there. You're right. Would you enhance additional plantings? I think that, you know, the adjacent neighbors, if they continue to complain about light getting onto their property from headlights, that type of thing, then we would probably recommend a revision of some sort. Permits can be revised as well. So if we get a concern from a particular neighbor or something like that, I'm thinking more like a subdivision or something, then we can provide additional recommendations for, and again, notice the word I'm using, recommendation, for someone to revise that particular application if it's not passing muster. But, you know, in this case, the rural character buffer of a 25-foot rural character buffer is what we have to hang our hat on, if you will.
And again, just to clarify, there's a difference in what you're referring to as recommended versus required.
Well, I think when you look at the specific condition in the site development activity permit, it's firmer language than that.
Okay, that's fair. All right, the last set of questions here is going to be about landscaping code and landscaping plans. So what Kitsap code defines the constitution of these buffers?
I would have to look. I don't know it offhand.
Is it 17,500?
That's the planting recommendations. I believe it's 17,500, but I don't know the specific. There's a specific element in 17,500.
Okay.
Again, that is, I believe, a condition in the site development activity permit that we have in the permit itself.
Well, we'll discuss that in a moment here. We were looking at 827 earlier. This is the notes in the permit. On the very last page in the notes of the permit, as of this particular juncture, this you'll see what I'm looking at here.
Oh, well, there you go. That is the condition. Yeah.
Got it. So this is from August 30th, 2024. So these are essentially your notes that you had entered in at the time, helping guide, you know, the constitution
correct.
Buffers, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. You had also reiterated this to the applicant in that red lined or the red text email that earlier, if you recall, you had listed the codes. Okay. Was there any lack of clarity between the parties? I mean, think about, you mentioned the meeting from December 2024, when all of us met in person at DCD. Was there any lack of clarity at that time between the parties about the landscape plan requirement at that time?
I don't remember.
But at that point, the applicants did go ahead and plant the screening buffer we were just seeing those photos, A133, 134, that I just showed you.
They asked if they could get started. I saw there's nothing to preclude someone planting plants on their property.
Understood. As a result of that meeting, you provided the applicants with clarity about the landscaping plan requirements for the forthcoming visit, site visit you're about to make to take a look at their plantings, correct?
I don't recall. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay. When you did go out there and inspect those plantings we were just looking at, you did declare them to be, quote, sufficient and, quote, adequate in the permit's notes. And
I think Jeff Smith wrote that note.
Okay. At that time, the conditioning on the permit changed. And that's when the final acceptance came out. So that was reversed, the second acceptance. The third acceptance came out. The easement was dropped, if you recall.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to show A29, because this difference is what we're trying to understand. So these were the conditions as of the second acceptance. And I'm going to come down here and show. So the one in gray right here. Landscaping okay. should be installed. So that's basically the reference to 17500.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then if we look at the final conditions in A30, so these are the conditions listed once the very final acceptance came out. It's gone. There is no reference to 17500 in here at all. Was the landscape plan requirement removed at that time?
No.
Okay. Let me open up A155. This is a rendering. It's not 100% accurate, but it's pretty close. So you'll note this is the north end of the applicant's parcel.
Yep.
The darker green are the new planting areas where you can confirm, I hope, that the Edwards had planted some various conifers and a few rows in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
The existing buffer sort of in yellow were those sparser areas that Mr. Edwards had been asking you about, whether or not those qualify as CEPA-required rows and whatnot a few months earlier. So that this basically shows us what has been planted. We already looked at the northwest corner and saw that there were the photographs of the northwest corner. I'm not going to bring those up again. We were just looking at that. Generally, is it your belief that that northwest corner does not experience the same impacts up here as these other two areas?
Nope. Sorry.
So these were the areas where plantings were called for. The farm plan shows them going back down into the yellow area here.
Yep.
And then we've got the area up here that was the concern for the neighbor to the north. Is it your assessment that the impacts at the northwest corner are not as significant as those in the areas where these buffers exist?
You mean the neighbor actually in that neighbor there?
Well, just generally in these areas. I mean, yeah, the northwest corner up here.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we would look at that. Again, you say I inspected it, but that was not an inspection. We're not going out to look to see, oh, that meets, because we can't inspect yet. It's not.
Okay. So what was the purpose of that visit then?
I think to have an understanding, to take a look at, the property and have an understanding of what specifically is out there. I had never seen the installed fence, for instance, so we saw where that was, to just generally take a look. They had planted some plants, wanted to have an understanding. Hey, are these generally, the kinds of plants you would be looking to? And I would say, yes, generally.
Okay. So you labeled them as sufficient or adequate?
I believe that Mr. Yeah. Smith probably labeled that as sufficient. I would definitely not call those plantings sufficient at this point. That's okay. Not a functional screen okay. at this time.
Was there any intent based on that visit to remove the landscaping plan requirement and remove 17500 as the governing code for these buffers?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. So is there any, so I guess the confusion is because that condition was dropped from the permit citing 17.5. Was that just incidental?
I think that may be an error. I don't know if I actually reviewed the final conditions on there. But again, my focus is more environmental. I think perhaps that was just an error. But we will definitely make sure that's a condition for sure. That's not omitted on purpose.
Okay. In that December 2024 meeting, we're getting really close to the end here. We want to get this finished up so we can all head off to have a great weekend. In that December 2024 meeting we were talking about a moment ago, the applicants were talking about the 1 to 3 foot trees that they wanted to install. And you know, there were concerns expressed about the fact that 17,500, you know, looks for either, you know, 4 foot trees or 6 foot trees, depending on the type of landscape, you know, screening. You had mentioned in that meeting that there was advantage to the 1 to 3 foot trees, and your logic at the time was that the smaller trees ultimately grow faster.
I would say that bald and burlapped trees do not do well initially. They take a lot of water. They take the root system takes forever to take hold. A potted plant will outcompete a bald and burlap plant every single time for ultimate height.
Okay. So in other words, so when you're talking about long day. Distinguish between, you've got bare root, you've got potted, you've got burlapped. And so, you know, ideally you're saying potted is probably the fastest growing, followed maybe by bare root.
Bare root does pretty well. It depends on the soil that they're put into. So if there's an existing driving surface or something like that, they're not going to do well. I planted hundreds of thousands of bare root trees in my life. So I know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes. I'll take any suggestions sometime you have on incense eaters, because we've seen that.
Okay.
when it comes to bare root, we've had 100% success in some and 20% success in others. So maybe someday I'll hook up with you on that in our forest restoration project. So when we're talking about 17.5 here, 17.5, yeah, sorry, 17.500. You're right. Thank you. We're still talking about the fact that 6 foot trees most likely are going to be required if we're trying to get the proper size buffer, correct?
Well, I believe that the land use spec calls out there's a specific specification.
Yeah.
For sure. Yes.
Yeah. And so one of the questions I had, I'm going to skip to that. Incidentally, one of the things I was going to show everybody was that we, and we can see these for reference. I don't know if Mr. Heacock has to see them in exhibits A143 through A149. The appellants did plant two rows of trees on the inside of the easement, outside of the easement on the neighboring property. One was 2 feet tall trees, and the other one was 6 foot tall trees. And they were all potted. And the 6 foot tall trees have outperformed the 2 foot trees by quite a bit.
Could be the soil type.
They're about 30 feet away from where this line is, but that's in our that's been entered to the record already, but I don't want to take up your time with that today. Is shrubbery and ground cover not also required in screening rows as typically defined per 17,500?
I think they are typically. Again, we didn't inspect anything. We looked at it. It's not a done deal for sure.
Okay.
What was planted there.
Okay. We're going to go back to A27 again. This was the notes of the permit we were looking at, because they're very helpful. Again, last page of A27. So the note that you've written about essentially 17,500 and what governs this.
Yep.
Yep. So you had mentioned here that you cited that 17,527B2 solid screening buffer was what guides essentially the constitution of this screening row. In the red text email A66, the other exhibit, you had mentioned that the requirement was 17,527A2, a separation buffer. And there are, of course, differences between. And then in December 2024, in the meeting that we had together at the DCD, you switched back to the B2, the solid screening. So is it B2 that applies here?
I would have to look. I'm sorry. I would have to look at the specific code.
Okay. You'd also cited at one point 17570 to address the planting of buffers on slopes in this case. Does that still potentially apply?
17?
17570, I'm sorry. So planting on slopes.
Oh, yeah, if there was related slope plantings, yeah.
Okay. One of the options available to you via 17500, especially if you end up going with A2, so in other words, a separation buffer rather than solid screening buffer, one of the options available is a site obscuring fence. Given related impacts at the ground level, the longevity of the impacts already experienced by neighbors, was solid fencing ever considered in this case?
No, it could be considered.
Okay, so it is an option available to you.
Sure.
At any point, I don't think you're going to answer this in the affirmative, but did the director reduce the landscaping, buffering, or screening of the site design standards per 17420.030 in this proposal?
I don't know.
Okay. We don't see
anything. The director, you said? I don't know.
Okay. All right. So you're not aware of any reduction in the landscaping requirements.
No.
That was explicit.
I'm not aware. No.
All right. So in terms of protecting these buffers, is a native growth protection easement not applicable to these buffers?
I would not say so. No, an NPD, okay. No.
And since the native vegetation retention covenants are typically of stormwater origins, you would not recommend that these be added to that covenant as well?
I don't think this is necessary. Because I bet you that we'd get a phone call if there were impacts to those particular buffers.
Well, and that's the concern, because the neighbors have already experienced what that's like all of a sudden when the trees disappeared. So the concern is that this could happen again someday, which is why the appellants are making the case. Well, it happened to these particular neighboring parcels once. We're concerned about it happening again, not necessarily because of Edwards. It could be an error, you know. And that we just reset the lack of screening buffer over and over and over again is I think the concern. One more question for you, genuinely, just one, I promise this time, and I'm done here. Do you believe that the processing of this permit has been predictable, efficient, and consistent?
No.
That's all I've got. Thank you, Mr. Heacock. I appreciate it.
Okay, let's. I guess we can hold off on the cross examination on the 28th. I don't think there's much point in doing that now. It's 4:52. It's Friday. We're all probably pretty tired, so we'll see you on the 28th at 9 o'clock to finish off this. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So just one scheduling issue. It sounds like Megan Edwards cannot make the new hearing date. Mm-hmm. I guess so. Couple things on that. So she might be able to make the 29th work, but I guess I have a clarifying question that I guess would be for Mr. Clemenson. I'd be curious to know what your planned questions are for her that you haven't already addressed with Mr. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, you questioned him for I think around 8 hours, and I think we've established that the county didn't completely rely on the statements from both of the Edwards in making their determination. They largely relied on a lot of their own investigations. So I guess I'd wonder what possible use her testimony would be in this case.
Yeah, we're largely following up on questions that Mr. Edwards referred to her. And we had several of those. I can say this, Mr. Dragon, this is not going to go on a long time. This is not going to be 8 hours. We're not going to repeat all that. This is 20 minutes maximum. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this has happened before. You said that you had a certain amount of questions for my client. I think we doubled the amount of time that you had contemplated for him. So you could understand my concern.
Yeah, I know. I understand it. Witnesses' testimony goes on a little bit longer than others. This is going to be quick, and that I can pledge you. I know that because the number of questions I have is not that many. And again, they largely follow up based on things that Mr. Edwards had referred to her.
So what types of questions are we talking about here?
Oh, gosh.
I guess I want to make sure.
Process questions. In other words, statements have been made about how this action got started, how this SDAP got started, how the submittals were assembled, that the appellants have evidence that to the contrary. We want to make sure that we understand that the submittals are in a good place to be considered by the county, because we've heard testimony today the county has relied heavily, especially on the stormwater side, on these submittals.
Well, let's do it this way, because actually I was thinking of doing this anyway. Mr. Clement, and this will give you more time to think about it, is just email the questions you're thinking of asking, not every single one specifically, but you know, just in general what those questions are, and then we can assess the relevance and whether you can go ahead and ask them. So do you do that by next Wednesday?
I can do that. Okay. What day of the week is that? Or what day of the month is that? That's the 20th?
20th, yeah. And then we'll assess
I can give you an overview of the general topics.
Okay, and then Mr. Durland, you can raise your objections by the following Friday, and then I'll rule on that before we get to the hearing on the 28th.
Okay, that sounds good. So I guess then in that case, should we set a backup date? Because if you do determine...
You said the 29th she's available. Would that work for you, Ms. Jones? Did you hear me, Ms. Jones? I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Oh, yeah. I was asking if the 29th would work for Ms. Edwards' testimony.
It should work. Are we thinking a whole day or in the
morning? No. We're talking less than an hour is what it should be. So 9 o'clock.
That should work, actually. That'll work for myself and admin staff.
Okay. All right. So that'll be the backup time. So we've got the 28th for all the other witnesses, the 29th at 9 o'clock for Ms. Edwards. Okay, with that, I think we're done, right? So we can finally get on with our weekend. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you the 28th.
Thank you.